Michael Coolidge Show, end of the week show. And we are back in our routine. Every end of the week, we speak with our friend, Gail Trotter. This is the only radio show and media appearance she's done all week. Gail, welcome back.
Great to be with you. I'm glad we're back in the saddle.
Yes. You are not, this is not the only media appearance you've done.
No.
I counted, you've done 704 this week alone, and we're the 705th one. Is that accurate?
You're 706.
706? Oh, you must have done one earlier this morning. And I do get calls from listeners or emails from listeners, too, and say, hey, I saw Gail Trotter on TV. Hey, I heard Gail Trotter on NPR the other day. Because they consider you, like, you know, part of this show. But you're all over the place all the time. I feel, I don't know, kind of like, I don't know if cheated on is the right word, but you are all over the place. You're not exclusive to the Michael Coolidge Show at all.
No, I know what you mean about that feeling, but I save my Friday mornings for you. So that is just ideal.
Wonderful. Yeah, you very rarely, the only times you've ever had to cancel had to do with like a family situation, like where, you know, or a personal one, like, you know, your stomach was being pumped, I know, recently because you were drinking too many milkshakes.
Yes, I told you about my milkshake addiction, and now you've shared it with the whole world. So everyone knows that my weakness is milkshakes and ice cream.
Yeah. Sorry to divulge that. You did not get your stomach pumped, but you were telling me that you do enjoy milkshakes, as do I. And I told you that my I've discovered a new delicious milkshake. Kind of at the end of my vacation, my last day on the vacation, what I like to do when I'm thinking that I'm going to go back on some sort of diet is to kind of pig out the night before, to like psychologically say in my brain, all right, this is the last time I'm going to have something delicious. And so I went to this place in the city I live in, Rochelle, Illinois, Country School, which is a weird name for an ice cream and food place, but it is called Country School, and I think it's unique. It's not a chain of them. Anyway, they're not an advertiser, but they do make good food, and I asked for a milkshake. I don't like milkshakes super thick. I like them so that I can drink them through the straw easily. So
right.
I said, make me a cookies and cream milkshake, please, but half cookies and cream, half vanilla. So the ice cream clerk said, as she scooped the cookies and cream in there, she said, do you want the vanilla to be the hard vanilla or the soft vanilla because you like it thin? And I said, oh, you know what? How about you make the soft, or how about you make the vanilla soft? So it's like a half hard, half soft milkshake. It was to die for, Gail.
I was going to ask if you enjoyed it, because I always have this feeling after I drink a milkshake that I'm kind of, my stomach's a little upset, and I've never decided if it's lactose intolerance or it's just the burst of sugar that hits your stomach, but it's always kind of that, or maybe it's just remorse that I've had 900 calories.
Well, it's funny. The reason I had it is because the airport that we had traveled from earlier that day in Atlanta, Joan and I ate at the airport this killer cheeseburger, and they had, you know, milkshakes there, and I ordered one there, and they said they were out of milkshakes, and I said, oh no! So I had one later that night when I got back to Rochelle. Anyway, I said to the clerk, well, you just saved me 900 calories. Because it had it on the menu, how many calories it was.
Right.
Of course, I just had it later there that night. I had no idea they were that caloric, Gail. 900 calories.
That's astonishing. I mean, just thinking about that is enough to make you not want to have milkshakes anymore. Because just in one little, and the fact that it's liquid too makes it not filling on your stomach. So you're having all those calories, and it doesn't really go to show in your appetite for the rest of the day.
Right. I did hear. I don't know if this works, but I did hear if you are dieting long term and you're trying to, you know, consume less calories, because that's really, I mean, if you want to get as simple as possible on how to lose weight, it's extremely simple. Just consume less calories than you exercise every day and you'll lose weight, guaranteed. But I have heard, maybe it was you who told me this, I forget who it was, but they said, you know, if you want to cheat every once in a while, for a meal, have dessert. Like, that in itself is a dessert, because you can have a steak and a salad and like a healthy meal, and it could be about 800 or 900 calories. But if you really want to cheat and you want that milkshake and you haven't had one in a couple of weeks and it's dinner time, just make yourself like an ice cream sundae, but just eat that, and you'll consume 1,000 calories. You know, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
It does make sense, and that was not from me, and now I'm sorry that you gave me that knowledge because it might be dangerous.
Right. What's for dinner tonight, honey? I'm having a milkshake. You guys are on your own. All right. Well, we did not have you come on the show today to talk about milkshakes. There are a variety of things we wanted to ask you about. We talked about your other media appearances, and tell our listeners about this NPR appearance you did recently. We don't like to plug other radio programs, but, you know, there's not a huge overlap between Michael Coolidge show listeners and National Public Radio, I don't think. What were you on about, and how did that go?
Yes, I would say that this show and NPR is my second favorite show after the Michael Coolidge show, of course.
Thank you.
Enjoy it because usually I'm the only conservative that they have asked to come on a panel and represent the view of millions of American people. So once President Obama's administration released this letter on Friday to all public school districts across the country dealing with a change in transgender policy, NPR called me and said, would you do this panel with two other people and a moderator? So I dropped everything and rushed over to the studio downtown, which if you are familiar with D.C. at all, it's very close to the Capitol. It's this big building that in part taxpayers are paying for, beautiful, sparkling new building. It is a beautiful studio with a lot of staff. And the people are super friendly. It's a really engaging, you know, the hum of it, just to kind of put the picture in your mind, you walk in the building, and it's a very open workspace, and there are people at little cubicles all over constantly monitoring the news. So I go in, and there are two people who support President Obama's new transgender edict from Washington, D.C., and I am the sole person to represent the fact that maybe this is wrong for, you know, about 10,000 reasons, but any radio show, you only get a certain amount of time to talk, and I had the two other guests trying to shout me down and, you know, make me realize my erroneous ways, and the moderator was great. I've been on her show many, many times. She asked really good questions, and I could see that as a parent, she was uncomfortable with this transformation coming from Washington, D.C., suffocating the schools all across the country.
Yeah, you know, you and I had lunch a couple of weeks ago in downtown Washington, D.C., probably not far from where you're talking about.
Right.
And we actually had a discussion about the bathrooms there because I went down to the bathroom and it said, I even took a picture of it on the bathroom, men, women, and the rest of us. And it said that on each bathroom. So I guess I could go into either one. And by the way, these were bathrooms that only one person at a time could go in. So there was a small line of men waiting outside to use this one bathroom. You know, it's a fact of life that men, just because of our anatomy, do go to the bathroom quicker than women do. I think, you know, if you timed us. But so now they kind of equalized it. And
right.
There was this line there. Anyway, we had a discussion about that. And as much as I raised my eyebrows and said, okay, this is a private establishment. They have the right to do that. I saw it in another Washington restaurant, too. He claimed that it was the law there because I did ask the manager about it just out of curiosity. I don't know that that's the case. Whatever. Private establishment, you can do whatever. I think you do have to have bathrooms. But I was going to say, you don't even have to have bathrooms there. But I think code-wise, you do. But this idea of the government coming in and saying to kids, to people under the age of 18, to children, that your 14, 15-year-olds, and I know you have daughters who are in that age group or were in that
right.
age group, that the government's saying you must, if you're getting public funding in any way, federal money in any way from the federal government to this high school, your girls have to, if they're going to use a locker room or shower after sports or something like that, there can be no restrictions on students born with male body parts using that facility with your high school daughters.
Michael, it's even more invidious than that because this letter issued by the Obama administration does not have the force of law. It was trying to reinterpret a 1972 act of Congress that barred sex discrimination to try and prevent any kind of discrimination or harassment of women. So for 40 years, over 40 years, this law did not apply to the transgender category. And yet President Obama, through this letter, is trying to rewrite law without actually either going through Congress and getting the 40-year-old law changed or having it be an executive action that requires notice and comment. So it's even worse because they're saying this is the new national Washington one-size-fits-all policy for all public schools across the country, but we are not really making it a law. But at the same time, we are threatening you explicitly in the letter with withdrawing funds if you don't comply. So it's the worst of both worlds in a system where we care about the rule of law.
What was the counter to this? I mean, you were when you were on this national radio show on NPR. From all of the people, no one was on your side. You said the moderator was pretty fair to you. That's good. But all these other people trying to shout you down. You said there was one man who was not in studio with you, but in a remote studio yelling at you. What was their main point? What was the brunt of their argument?
They feel like the costs of this change in policy are not significant, that it's just fear tactics that are being asserted on behalf of the status quo. So, for example, one of the points that I made was that this administration is not candidly assessing the cost of this policy that they want to promote throughout every public school in the country. The costs are, first, you have a violation of a woman's right to privacy. We have the Supreme Court over and over again inventing new rights based on this idea of the right of privacy, which we do have, but there's no place that should be more private than a bathroom, and it doesn't just apply to bathrooms. It's changing facilities, showering facilities, locker rooms, any dorm rooms that have multiple people of one gender or one sex, and any place if a high school goes on an overnight field trip and they have to have hotel accommodations, then it applies in those situations as well. So we have those costs under the right of privacy. We also have the cost that there will be people who will pretend to be transgender.
Right.
Because the letter does not require a doctor to certify that the person in question is transgender, but it will allow people to pose as transgender, go into bathrooms, and raise four potential risks to women. One is that you have peeping Toms. Two is that you would have video surveillance. Three would be you would have a risk of sexual assault. And number four is you would have a risk of increased rape. And the Obama administration would like everyone to ignore the fact that you are increasing the risks.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, there is no human instinct more powerful, I think, than, you know, sexual attraction or sex. I mean, it clouds everything. It makes people, you know, ruin marriages. It makes people, you know, do things that they shouldn't do. It makes them do things that could threaten their job, can take down their political careers. So much of it has to do with the sexual temptation and stuff. And so we're saying that in the high school and college years of young people's lives, where they're more perhaps sexually active or that sexual being in them is at its peak in many cases, we're setting up situations where this sort of thing, you know, we keep hearing about this epidemic of sexual assault of women on college campuses, and
right.
You know, how are we not setting up situations here where this might happen more frequently? And we're not talking about transgender, girls who were previously boys doing stuff. We're talking about heterosexual males pretending to be transgender and having an opportunity to be in situations where there are scantily clad members of the opposite sex there. And nothing, absolutely nothing, can stop this if the Obama administration and their ilk have their druthers, right? Because they can always say, a young man with ulterior motives can always say, hey, I'm identifying as a female today, so leave me alone, coach whatever. Get out of my business. I'm showering here with these 10 girls.
Don't go too far with that idea. Michael.
I know. I don't want to give people ideas, but I don't understand how this doesn't prevent this sort of thing.
Right. Well, the argument on the other side was that the school has to treat the kid as transgender all the time. But if you look at the actual language of the letter, it's based on the child's say-so.
It's based on what the child wants.
Yes. And there's no confirmation, certificate, anything. And we're not talking about transgender people who have gone through the surgery and they've, you know, decided that that's what they want to embrace, this new sex. We're talking about people who are kind of in between, but that's not the risk. It's the risk of people who will pose as transgender and have ill motives.
Was anyone receptive to your points other than the moderator? I mean, did people actually... sounded like they were listening to you on this national show with people on the other side of the aisle with you on this.
There was a comment on the NPR website, which I loved, where someone noted that I was the only one speaking in favor of this and respected my point, which I made in the interview, that this is not how we should have things done. This is rule by fiat. It cuts off the national conversation on this novel and controversial issue. And the commenter on the NPR website said, I disagree with Ms. Trotter's point of view, but I agree that it should not have been handled this way.
We're going to take a break and continue on the Michael Coolidge Show with Gail Trotter. Don't go anywhere. We're back on the Michael Coolidge Show. We continue with Gail Trotter. We were talking about this transgender bathroom directive, or what would you call it, what the federal government, what the Obama administration is trying to do with this rule? An edict? What would you call it, Gail?
Edict is a descriptive of what the force of the letter is, but it's really just a new policy or letter. But edict certainly gives the... I think, accurate impression that it is something that's being done outside of the regular order of our democratic political process.
Let me just ask you this. If, you know, we're talking about, what, 6 months left in the Obama administration or thereabouts, January?
Right.
Yeah, about 6 months left. If a high school district just decided to completely ignore this, say, yeah,
right,
whatever, we're not going to change anything. If a boy goes into a girl's bathroom and girls complain, he's getting kicked out. I don't care what, if you know, like if I were a principal, that's what I would do. I'd say no. And he can call the press, whatever. We're not changing anything. What do you think could happen?
Well, it's interesting because I think Texas and Utah are two of the states that have said we're not going to comply with this or have made motions in that direction and said you can even cut off our federal funding. But this underscores the larger point that the more control we give to Washington, especially over things like schools and things that have traditionally been in the purview of the state government and not the federal government, the more power the federal government has to dictate to parents and local school districts what they can do or can't do in order to run their schools effectively. So it's really encouraging to see states like Texas and Utah say that they're not only going to resist it probably, but even to the point where if they lost federal funding, it's not worth it to them to put their students at risk, because you're not just talking about the safety and privacy of the transgender kids, who reasonable accommodations can be made for them. You can have single stalls, you can have accommodations so that they're able to change, but not allow anybody who says that they're transgender to go into women's and young girls' facilities. So I hope that what Texas and Utah are doing is a message to the rest of the states and the parents who find that this is unacceptable. But usually when this happens, the states end up caving because they just depend on that federal money so much.
The government cheese. The AEI thing, the American Enterprise Institute Leadership Seminar conference I went to a couple weeks ago in D.C., one of the their education experts brought up this point. He was kind of our, and this is a guy who was a teacher for years. He worked in administration for long years. Like, this is a guy who came from the front lines of education. He's not just a think tanker, you know, a PhD student right out of academia. And he said, you know, think about how the Department of Education operates and think about how the Department of Defense operates. In the Department of Defense, there is a clear hierarchy from that private on the field all the way up through the Pentagon to the commander-in-chief of the President of the United States. You need a Department of Defense. No matter how bloated it might be,
right,
there's a clear hierarchy. They have to do things that their superior NCO and then officers say. Department of Education doesn't control school districts. You don't have to, you know, everything is, and this is a good thing, that school districts are controlled by local people, as it should be. The ultimate authority is from the local school board over every high school, every public high school, and every public, you know, grammar school and education and elementary school in America. But you've got this giant Department of Education created by Jimmy Carter in the late 70s that does this sort of stuff that schools don't have to follow, but they do have this control with the purse strings, in a way, with this federal funding that they give, all these strings attached. Is there a way that a school could ignore it and then just wait for the Obama administration essentially to you know, go off into the sunset, and hopefully we don't have a Democrat in the White House next year, and by that time, any sort of federal funding, you know, that was quote-unquote withheld would just come back in a Trump administration, for example.
Right, and think about this. I made this point. I think they cut it out of the NPR interview, but the guy who was vehemently opposed to my position said, if schools don't like it, they can sue. And my response to him, being very experienced in the legal world, the process is the punishment. Do we want tons, you know, basically millions of school district money going to fight the federal government on something that should not be an issue, that has not been voted into law, that has not been discussed in a way that Americans feel comfortable about accepting a transformation in this way? This just underscores the fact that President Obama has overreached his executive authority again and again and again, and tried to legislate from the White House and from the executive branch more generally. The good thing about this, because he did it this way, if schools refuse to take it up before he's out of office, and if they're, you know, maybe Hillary won't support this policy either. Who knows? I haven't seen whether, if she's come out with a statement on this, but it's something that can be undone very easily because it does not have the force of law. So there is that good thing, the silver lining in the cloud that we can remember as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that the that can be undone. A lot of this executive action stuff that the Obama administration did, and frankly, I think Trump should make a big deal about that. Part of the big reason why he should be elected is to undo so many of these things. Because you know that so many of these executive actions that Obama has done, if Hillary Clinton wins, they'll just stay in place. I mean, hundreds of them. John,
he was part of it.
John in Rockford, how about we take a call, Gail?
Exciting.
Yeah. John in Rockford, you have a comment. Thanks for holding, by the way.
Sure, no problem. You know, this starts with schools, but I'm wondering if the left has really thought this through. Now, what becomes of federal and state set-aside programs, for instance, being a contractor in Rockford, projects that are set aside for female-owned businesses? How are those programs going to be impacted by something like this?
Are you suggesting, and I think I know where you're going here, John, are you suggesting that, like, women-owned businesses, like, what if a man says, you know what,
yes,
I identify as a female?
Yes. Today I identify as a woman, and so my business now qualifies for this set-aside program.
Great question.
Or I,
Gail,
or I
any
identify
thoughts?
As an American Indian or some of the other, you know, various preferred groups.
Yeah, no, that is an absolutely great question, because you're talking about real dollars here, real money,
right,
that could absolutely affect your business in a
And I don't think with this administration there is such a thing as a line drawn in the sand. There are no lines anymore. It just keeps going and going.
Right. Gail?
That's a great point, and I think you're going to... that litigated over and over again. It's already happening across the country in many, many districts. And with businesses, it's going to have a significant impact. And we see this progression of trying to tear down the biological differences between men and women. We've seen that with the draft. There is legislation right now that would require all women to register for Selective Service like men do, I guess, at 18, right, Michael?
Yes.
And I think it's a concerted effort by the left to try to break down the distinctions. I don't think that you would see that that would apply, at least in the racial issues, the set-asides for racial groups that have been discriminated against and then have special programs to try and help them advance. But how could we not see this happen in the business world with government contracting? Because certainly, if we're reaching into the nursery schools and the kindergartens with this type of policy, then transgender people who would like to have access to these programs that are set up by the federal government for women-owned businesses certainly would have the argument to say it's all across the nation, this is federal policy, and why should we be discriminated against?
John, thank you so much for your call. This is, taking a step back, think about the impetus for this. We don't want people who live different lifestyles than we do to be bullied, harassed, or feel ostracized in society, right? Isn't that like at the root of stuff, of all of this?
An inclusive society. We want an inclusive society.
And I wish that most people understood that, generally speaking, everyone wants that. I think compassionate people want that. I've interacted with and actually worked with people who are transgender. And there's, if you're doing a good job, if you're a good person, if you want to live your life a certain way outside of work or even at work, you want to wear a certain thing as long as it doesn't affect the business that you're working at, I don't care. I really don't care. It's up to you and your life and your family or whatever. But when you start involving the federal government in these things, you're opening up, and not just the federal government, local government. You got freaking Bill de Blasio in New York. Have you heard about this, Gail?
Oh, there's so much about him. Which particular?
Oh my gosh, he has. We're going to take a break here and continue on this. If you haven't heard about this, in New York City, the Bill de Blasio administration, the mayor of New York, wants to fine businesses who call customers the wrong salutation, like Mr. or Mrs. If you call a customer yes, sir, can I help you? And it's actually a woman or a man who has transgendered into a woman. If you do that, you can be fined $250,000. We'll talk about that after this on the Michael Kulich Show. Stay with us.
Hear all that commotion? That's our giant pre-Memorial holiday sale going on right now at Call Your RV Supercenter in Rockford. People are saving money by the buckets full, and you can too. For example, 21-foot Wolf Pup travel trailers with air and awning are just $99.95 and $119 a month. And 30-foot V10 powered Freelander motorhomes with queen bed and more are only $57.95 and $389 a month. Even 29-foot double slide FR3 motorhomes with hydraulic jacks and rear vision camera are just $75.95 and $499 a month. Plus, get buckets full of savings right now on over 450 other new and used RVs in stock. So get in, get a great deal, then get way out of town just in time to use for the season's first big holiday weekend. But hurry, our Memorial Holiday Sale lasts only through the 22nd and only at Call Your RV Supercenter, Harrison Avenue across from Cherryvale Mall in Rockford. Call 866-323-7864 or visit us on the web at callyourrv.com. All offers plus tax, license, prep, and destination fees. 10% down, 120 to 240 months financing at 5.99 to 6.99 APR on approved credit subject to prior sale.
Guys, if you've been using or wanting to try Viagra but are worried about the costs, we have great news. Now you can finally get real results at huge discounts with our Healthy Men alternative to the little blue pill. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get results for a fraction of the price? Call today and get 40 pills for only $99. Others cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us if you want real results at the lowest prices. Never pay $15 a pill for Viagra when you can get real results for for less than $3 per pill. Call 800-375-1270 today and save over $500. You can have those breathtaking, toe-curling moments again and again. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Call right now and we'll rush you your supply delivered discreetly to your door. Just call 800-375-1270. That's 800-375-1270. Again, 800-375-1270.
Rock Valley Credit Union.
No matter who you are, no matter what you do, we are rock solid and we're here for you.
Spring is here. Time to think about summer toys. Whether you like spending time on the water, traveling the country, or having the open wind on your face, Rock Valley Credit Union offers loans to help you with your summer toy purchase. We offer competitive loan rates, flexible terms, and local decisions for motorcycles, boats, jet skis, RVs, and so much more. To learn more, visit one of our five locations or visit us online at rockvalleycreditunion.org. Federally insured by NCUA.
Get home safe.
Every day, nearly 100 Americans die in car crashes.
Please make it home safe.
25% of all car crashes involve a cell phone.
Please make it home safe.
Remind yourself what is important every time you get into the car.
Please make it home safe.
Put down your phone and make it home safe.
This message brought to you by Federated Mutual Insurance Company.
Federated Insurance, insuring businesses since 1904. Please contact your local Federated representative, Todd Shoemaker, or Eric Gabrielson at 779-475-0745. That's 779-475-0745. Hey, are you ready for that new countertop, cabinet, or floor? You'll probably shop around looking for the highest craftsmanship and best value. And guess where you'll likely wind up every time? JC's Granite and Flooring. JC's Granite and Flooring takes pride in its high standards, creative designs, and quality craftsmanship. For granite countertops, all forms of flooring and cabinets go straight to the experts. And for a limited time, get a free stainless steel sink and edge upgrade with the purchase of a kitchen countertop. Exceptions may apply. Call for details. JC's Granite and Flooring, serving all of the state line area. Save a ton of time by going to the granite flooring and countertop experts that you were probably going to wind up going to anyway. JC's Granite and Flooring.
The Michael Coolidge Show on WROK.
We're back on the Michael Coolidge Show live. This end of the week show. We continue with Gail Trotter. Before the break, we were talking about this transgender bathroom thing. This was supposed to be like a five-minute segment, Gail.
Right.
And we're in segment number three. But it's great. We teased before the break. In New York City now, Bill de Blasio wants to fine businesses for not calling customers their preferred gender name. The New York City human rights law requires employers to use an employee's preferred name, pronoun, and title, example, Ms., Mrs., Mr., etc., regardless of the individual's sex assigned at birth, anatomy, gender, medical history, appearance, or the sex indicated on the individual's identification. If it is violated, the New York City Human Rights Commission can fine this business, this private business, $125,000 for the first offense, and if it's a second time or if it is interpreted in a certain way, $250,000. Essentially, putting somebody out of business for excessively calling somebody a gender pronoun or something that they don't want to do.
Crazy.
How on earth can this stand up in court?
It's crazy, but the courts have been packed by President Obama over the last 7 years with hardcore leftists who don't think that law is what it says it is and are willing to support this ideology, this progressive vision of how we should all live together that is not supported by the majority of Americans.
No.
And yet it's being advanced in a rapid pace, I think Obama sees the writing on the wall. He knows he's going to be out. And he and all of the people like Bill de Blasio are trying to force through as much stuff they can force through before there is a change in the administration, which affects the judges who are put on the bench, which affects the determination of lawsuits like this. I love New York City. It's one of my favorite places to visit. But when I hear this, I think of all the problems with New York City and how can they be devoting any amount of time or city resources into having this sort of policy instead of dealing with the true problems that confront New York City.
I mean, like, it's just anyone in a room somewhere. JC's Granite and Flooring. JC's Granite and Flooring. It is seriously where you will wind up every time when you look at everyone else's prices. And then you go to JC's Granite and Flooring. They're the premier granite and flooring experts in Northern Illinois. And I'm telling you, when you price everyone else out and you get the different estimates from everyone else, you're going to wind up at JC's Granite and Flooring every time. Sorry about that little hiccup here. We petered out for some reason technologically, but we're still live with Gail. Gail, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Can you stick around for a little bit of the next hour, too?
Yes, I would love to.
There are so many other things that we need and want to talk about here. But let me just finish my main point, and I'm sure, or I'd like your thoughts on it. Like, is there anyone in the room who just says, you know what, we agree with this, we should call people what they want to be called, but we shouldn't force people to. The government shouldn't do this. But that never sinks into the left. They say, no, let's force people to live the way we want them to.
Right. And some things are outside of the law. They're just moral sanctions, the way we treat each other. And law can't be expected to regulate those kinds of interactions.
No, absolutely shouldn't. You know, if a friend of mine says they want to be called John instead of Johnny, especially in public, I'd be rude for me to, in front of a lot of people, if they want to be, you know, call him Johnny. Fine, I'll call you
right.
John. You know, but you can't enact a law saying you must call him John or you're going to be fined. Like, that's not the point and the purpose of government. It just infuriates me. And I really, really hope somebody tests this in New York and it does go up. This legally could, I assume, be challenged and go up the chain and be overturned.
Oh, it probably will go up the chain, but who knows the result.
Right. We'll be back with hour number two of the Michael Coolidge after this. Gail Trotter's going to stick around. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Michael Coolidge Show. Coolidge.com. It's spelled with a K.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome to the Michael Coolidge Show. This end of the week show, we've got a packed hour of radio information, entertainment, and interviews. Kanye West is not going to be joining us in person, but he was on Ellen earlier this week and went a little crazy. We will, you will not want to miss this this audio segment, I promise. But continuing with us right now for a second hour, because we didn't even get remotely close to all the things we wanted to talk about, Gail Trotter. Gail, thanks so much for sticking around.
Happy to do so.
Yes. Let's switch gears if we can. And unless you wanted to say anything more about the fiats put forward by both the Obama administration and this this mayor in New York City, this Bill de Blasio, who wants to use the force of government to make people say and do things a certain way rather than, you know, just human beings interacting with each other in a natural way.
Right. It reminds me of the Reagan quote, the government that can give you everything can also take it all away. So the more that we have allowed the government to interfere in our businesses, in our families, in our school districts, the more ability that people who get elected to offices have to reach into these places and make them align with their own political ideology. So I'd rather not discuss those things, but I think it's important to let everyone know what's going on.
Yeah, I've talked about this cartoon I've seen before. I think it's from a libertarian site or whatever, but it's just woman with a thought bubble saying, should the government dot dot dot, and then another person on the bottom part just saying no. Like, should the government? No, the government shouldn't, you know? There are certain things, yes, the government should do, but, like, the instinct should be that the government... That's one of the reasons that every amendment, correct me if I'm wrong, to the Constitution, or at least or say the first 10 of them in the Bill of Rights, starts with Congress shall not, you know? The government shall not do things.
The Constitution, the whole point of the Constitution was to protect individuals and the states from encroachments by the federal government, and we tend to forget that. If you want to understand what the federal government should be doing, the Constitution has a list of enumerated powers, and we should go back to that anytime the federal government wants to do something and say, is this in the Constitution? Is it power that the people have granted our federal government? And if not, then it should be rejected.
Speaking of which, the federal government recently, through the Obama administration, wants to push a law here, and it's already happening, a new rule. You know, they don't go through Congress anymore. They don't believe in this whole systems of checks and balances thing. but they want to do this affirmatively furthering fair housing law, AFFH. Tell our listeners a little bit about this.
Yes, and you should know just by the title that they give it that it's not a good thing. It's just this ridiculous speech that is kind of pushing this idea of a utopia, and it's not something that the American people are going to like. And they can't use the words to accurately describe it because then there would be a complete uproar against it. But the whole idea about this is to use the power of the federal government to force building government-subsidized housing in middle-class neighborhoods on the principle of advancing equality. And yet, we know that state, local, and federal government, they have many, many programs to help fellow Americans who, for whatever reason, are down on their luck. They are unable to afford a home in a reasonable accommodation shelter. There are many, many programs. There are, you know, lots and lots of taxpayer dollars going to this. But the idea that the federal government can come in and dictate to local zoning boards who should be living in which neighborhoods is completely outrageous. We know that under federal law already, you're not allowed to discriminate in housing. So that's not a problem. There's already a law against that. There are already remedies for people who experience discrimination or think they're being discriminated against to go get relief and remedies from the courts, from the government.
Yeah.
But in this situation, they are trying very hard to rework the suburbs to gain more political power that has been waning from the Democratic Party in recent years.
Yeah, and our listeners, particularly in Rockford, know that this is something that is hitting home with a lot of listeners. We talk about it with Mayor Morrissey sometimes on our show. I know we haven't had him on in a while for various scheduling reasons, but we are scheduled to talk with him again later on this month. And this is a big issue. This is a huge flashpoint, I know, with the whole Newtown development. So, I know this is an issue that people, particularly in the Rockford area, are affected by. And I think it's a legitimate disagreement and fight. But again, it comes down to should the federal government be butting in here and doing this sort of stuff? I think most rational thinking people say, no, it shouldn't. But if something was meant to be, let's naturally do it in the free market, in how we naturally interact with people. But that never seems to be enough for the left. It's things aren't happening. Let's force people to do things.
Absolutely. And there's a really great piece about this on conservativereview.com by my buddy Dan Bongino, who's a former Secret Service agent to the presidents.
Yes.
And also ran for Congress from Maryland. And he writes a really scathing rebuke of the Republicans in Congress who had the opportunity yesterday to move forward to defunding this effort to have the federal government decide on local government zoning regulations, and they completely failed to take action. Now, this
action, what happened? I mean, what happened in Congress?
Well, one of the stalwart conservative champions, Senator Mike Lee of Utah, wrote an amendment to a bill that would allow the federal government to defund this AFFH effort by the Obama administration to take over local zoning laws. It was very clean. There was nothing objectionable. It would have been very effective to stop this in its tracks. And he did not get enough support from fellow Republicans. He just needed support from fellow Republicans. But we had another senator, Senator Collins, who is also Republican but not a stalwart conservative. She offered another amendment that provided a fig leaf for Republicans who did not want to go against the Obama administration on this regulation and actually did nothing. It merely restated federal law that said that the Department of Housing and Urban Development could not interfere. So there was, this was a perfect opportunity for the Republican Congress to take a firm stand against this misguided policy. And yet again, the Republican Congress has failed to take an easy action to try and at least stand up to some of the most egregious abuses of the Obama administration.
We're going to take a break and continue with Gail Trotter on The Michael Coolidge Show, this Friday edition. Coolidge.com, by the way, is our website, Coolidge.com. That's spelled with a K. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Our email address is radio@Coolidge.com, radio@KOOLIDGE.com. Don't go anywhere. We're back on The Michael Coolidge Show, live this end-of-the-week show. We continue with Gail Trotter from GailTrotter.com and the Independent Women's Forum. And Gail Trotter from The Michael Coolidge Show. She appears on The Michael Coolidge Show regularly every Friday, as a matter of fact. And we've just broken the record, Gail, for the longest time you've been on the show.
I think you're right, except when I've been co-hosting.
That's right, when you've done the full show. Last year, let's take a step back. This Egypt Air missing plane, flight 804, we really hesitate to talk about the specifics of it because the news keeps changing on it. We don't know for sure who's claimed responsibility for it. We know that no one has been recovered as far as a survivor goes. And this was a flight from Paris to Cairo. You, Gail Trotter, flew on an Egypt Air flight less than a year ago, no?
I did, and I took the flight from D.C. up to, I think it was Newark, and then Egypt Air had a direct flight from Newark to Cairo, and it had been a lifelong dream of mine to go to Cairo and see the city and the people and to see all the amazing archaeological finds and monuments there. So I took that trip, and you might remember the Egypt Air flight that went down from New York into the Atlantic Ocean. I don't remember how many years ago, maybe 10 years ago, but it was a very dramatic situation that happened. And there was a lot of controversy over whether the pilot had deliberately downed the plane or if there was a mechanical issue. And
was this the one, like, just off of Long Island?
Yes.
Like, yeah, I totally remember that. And that was never resolved, was it? That was never solved.
It was never solved. They did have the black box recording, and the pilot said some things, and the co-pilot said some things, so they drew some inferences from it. But the family was not satisfied about the family of the pilot was not satisfied about the resolution. They did not think that he could possibly have done that, of course. So to put that all as the background, I wanted to go do this, and Egypt Air was the best flight from America to Egypt, and all of this stuff is going on as ISIS is really heating up, and my family was very concerned about my safety on the flight and the trip itself. So to hear about this horrible tragedy where I think it's 66 people were on the plane,
yes.
It is just heartbreaking. And anytime I think we have an experience where we've done something and then other people do it and have a tragedy that ensues, mm-hmm. it drives it more home, I think, for those of us who've had that experience.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, kudos to you, too, for doing this. Like, this was a personal mission you went on, I know. You went by yourself.
Yes.
You know, you, a happily married mother of six children, and your, I know you said your family was concerned, but you know, Joel supported you in your mission to do this, right? He said, yeah, go for it. And I saw the pictures online, you know, the pictures of at the pyramids and in Cairo. Like, I don't know that anyone right now were, and maybe you, I certainly would not, after what happened this week, do a similar thing, you know, like book a flight to
each other.
I still would?
Because I understand how important tourism is to Egypt, and Egypt is one of our allies, and they get a tremendous amount of their national economy from tourism, and it has been really hurt ever since the revolution where Mubarak was overthrown, Morsi was in power for a while, then al-Sisi. And al-Sisi is a strong partner with us in the fight against Islamic terrorism. And I would like to see Egypt not go into more economic distress, because I think that plays into the hands of the bad people who are in the Middle East who want to take control of it, impose their idea of Islam, and fight with the United States and the Western world. So I hope and pray that this terrible, terrible tragedy with this plane will not deter people from visiting Egypt and spending dollars in their economy to help the fundamental support that they need in order to combat the forces of evil in the Middle East.
Gail, you've been so generous with your time this morning. I don't want to keep you on too long, but I do want to ask you about this Oklahoma law that passed yesterday. You and I are both believers in the sanctity of life and that life begins at conception. And I guess in the political world, we would be called pro-life. What exactly happened here with this abortion law? Explain it for our listeners. Is this going to stand up? And could this maybe be just like, you know, on the left, gay marriage changed things in our culture over, you know, for better or for worse. Gay marriage is the law of the land now. And, you know, it started a couple years ago. I always say, well, you know, on in a similar vein on the right, I feel like there is open opportunities here for there to be a collective changing of minds on when life begins and why abortion should be outlawed. They did it in an entire state yesterday or this week. What are your thoughts on it?
Right. This bill was passed by the legislature, and it's waiting to see if it'll be signed by the governor or vetoed, or she could just let it go for 5 days and it will go into effect. But you have to understand that this legislation comes with the background of the Kermit Gosnell trial in Philadelphia, the abortion doctor who targeted vulnerable women in the African-American community, in the economically disadvantaged community, and it was shown that in a lot of cases, these abortion providers are preying on the most vulnerable elements of our society. It also comes on the back of the Planned Parenthood videos from last summer showing possibly that Planned Parenthood was involved in the selling of baby body parts. So any trenchant observer of abortion politics for the last 40 years understands that Roe v. Wade did not resolve the abortion debate. And because it was an extrajudicial opinion relying on this right of privacy that we were talking about related to transgenderism, it did not resolve the issue. It was dissatisfactory as a matter of law and dissatisfactory as a matter of policy. So the time is ripe now for states that have strong commitments from lawmakers to try and protect women and protect human life, to try and challenge the abortion regime that we have in place right now. The only problem with that right now, as you know, Michael, the court is split 4-4, and probably even one or more of those four on the constitutionalist side of the court might shift and support keeping Roe v. Wade the way that it is. So in some ways it's an ideal time because of things that are going on in the abortion debate outside of the law, and in some ways it's not an ideal time because of the composition of the court. So it's kind of a gutsy move by the Oklahoma legislature to push this forward at this time. But a lot of times, you know, you think of William Wilberforce, who is a famous legislator in Britain, who was determined to end the slave trade. That was his mission in life, and it took him so much time to convince hearts and minds to end the slave trade in Britain. And I think probably many of these legislators in Oklahoma feel like this is the issue of our time.
Yes, and I think it can be the issue of our time nationally. If we soldier on. I lied, Gail. I do have one more question for you. I saw this online, and I had to get your opinion on it. I guess doctors now are asking, or it's creeping into medical questionnaire. My doctor hasn't asked me this yet, but I apparently they're trying to start the trend of doctors asking people now when they're going through their medical history and their medical situation, are there any guns in your home?
Yes. Pediatricians do that all the time now, and I feel like we've talked about this before because it's so offensive. They never ask you, do you have a residential pool, even though it's 100 times more likely that a young child will die at a house with a residential pool than a young child will die at a house in gunplay where the house has a gun.
Right. I heard a great, the best answer to this question. It was one of those clickbait things, but Jazz Shaw on Hot Air came up with the best answer to this, and I wanted you to get it. You know, there's all sorts of different ways you can say I'm offended. You can say how dare you. You can say why don't you ask me about pools. But his advice is lie through your teeth and say no. Next question. That's it. It's none of the doctor's business whether you do or not. Just say no. You don't, and move on.
Right. Can't disagree with him.
Right. There you go. Gail, anything else you would like to add before we say goodbye?
It's great to be back with you. It's been too long. You were very, very missed.
Well, you were very, very missed. Our listeners missed you, and I can never get enough of Gail Trotter. If I had a seven-hour show, I would ask you to stick around. But I know you have many, many other things to do in Washington, D.C. with your family and your work schedule. Thank you so much, as always, for coming back onto the Michael Coolidge Show. We will chat again next week.
Great to be with you, Michael, as always.
We'll be right back. 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 We'll